Greater Santon and beyond. Get ready for the Santon Times Hour
with your host,
Alexander.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen, everyone in between and beyond. This is the Santon Times Hour on Mix 93.8 and also available on all good digital platforms. I'm Alexander Leibner, and this is edition 135. It's week 43 of 2023. And can you believe it? Last week, I totally forgot to mention this. We've got 10 weeks left of the year, and then that's it for 2023. And then we start a whole new year, 2024. Well, I'm excited to be with you again this week. And if you'd like to send through your questions, your comments, your feedback, you can do so by getting in touch on email. You can email editor@santontimes.co.za. You can connect on social media @SantonTimes or visit the website www.santontimes.co.za. And if you're listening live on Mix 93.8 and not at a later stage via the mobile app or on one of the podcast platforms, well, you can use the WhatsApp line right now. It's open on 084-822-0938. That's 084-822-0938. And if you see any of the Santon Times digital billboards running across northern Johannesburg, take a picture, send it through. I'd love to see if you spot one. It's going to be running for the next couple of weeks. I think it's about 60 days or so. Very excited about that. But a special welcome to everyone listening in Johannesburg and Pretoria, across South Africa, or wherever you are in the world. If it's online or on air, I'm happy to report that all is well in Santon land. And as always, I'm joined by my left-hand man, Vincenzo. Thank you so much for being here again. And can we just take a moment to chat about the rugby this past weekend? I mean, if the previous week's game against France wasn't a showstopper, then I don't know what this week was. I mean, we now stand facing one of the longest weeks, I think, this year, as we build up to the final of the Rugby World Cup 2023. And we're going to be facing off against the All Blacks. I think the last time we did that in a final was back in 1995. So there's a lot coming together here. Both teams have also won the World Cup 3 times. So either which way, however it goes, one of these two teams is going to make history. I mean, what a time to be alive in rugby. And I'd love to hear from you how you felt about Saturday's game. It wasn't pretty. I feel like we didn't play our best. And England was definitely dominating that game. But a win is a win, even if it is a last-minute kick that got us the points that we needed. But I think we were hanging on with everything that we had. Honestly, at one point, I thought maybe I should switch this off and actually start watching something on Netflix or something, because I just couldn't take it anymore. But we made it. And what an exciting week ahead of us. A quick look at this past week that I had. Well, I had the pleasure of doing a talk for the management team and staff at a Santon Hotel Group, which was lots of fun. And thank you to them for inviting me to do that. Then it was International Gin and Tonic Day, and I spent some time with Bombay Sapphire, who organized a bit of a gin route through Greater Santon, different bars, places I'd never heard about. Very nice places. They're in Hyde Park. There's some spots in Rosebank. And it's always good to be introduced to some new spots. And I know one of them was probably packed on Saturday night for the rugby. They had some nice artists. They had some good cocktails. Loads of fun. Coming up on this week's show, he has become synonymous with real estate in South Africa. And now a book about his life has hit our shelves this week. I get a chance to chat to this property maverick in just a minute. Then one of Santon's hotels has a brand new executive chef, and I get a chance to chat to him as well about what makes him tick and chop. Stay tuned. And finally, I discover who some of South Africa's award-winning takeout spots are. This and more coming up shortly. Let me pre-warn you, it's an Indlovu Youth Choir-filled hour as we celebrate the Bokkers' victory on the weekend, and of course also prepare for a big weekend. It's time for Africa, and it's time for some music on the Santon Times Hour on Mix 93.8.
Show some love.
Subscribe. Share.
Leave a review and rating for the Santon Times Hour
on your favorite podcast app now.
You're listening to the Santon Times Hour.
It's the Santon Times Hour on Mix 93.8 and available on all good digital platforms. South Africa's Indlovu Youth Choir with Waka Waka, This Time for Africa. As we send our best wishes to the Springboks this week in the build-up to a highly anticipated final. Let's take a look at what else is making headlines this week. Well, Amazon announced that it will launch Amazon.co.za in 2024, providing South African-based sellers the ability to reach customers nationwide, reports Daily Investor. So many people might think that Amazon only sells its own stuff on its website, but actually they've got a very, very good percentage of people who just use the platform to sell to other people through Amazon. And I know that they've also opened their seller portal where you can register at quite a very competitive price. And you can have your own store on Amazon. So when they get going, you might make a few rand. Check that out. Its arrival comes as SA's online retail passed the 50 billion rand milestone in 2022. And that only accounts for around 4.7% of the total retail market, according to the Online Retail in South Africa 2022 study conducted by Worldwide Works with MasterCard. And that's according to a report by ITWeb. So it's just around 5%. Can you imagine how much more there is? He was destitute. He was fighting for survival on the streets of Sandton and earning a living as a waste reclaimer. His few possessions included a bucket, a small piece of soap, his degree certificate, an MA proposal, and a dream to pursue his studies further. Well, this past week, the University of Johannesburg conferred a master's degree in history on Gibson Nzimande, reports News 24. And I think we did speak about the story. He was one of those people that we probably see every day going through trash, collecting plastic and paper and whatever else he could find to earn a living. And now there he was on stage receiving a master's degree in history. What a fantastic story. Let's leave the headlines there for this week. After the break, I'm joined by the chairman of Sotheby's International Realty South Africa, Lou Geffen, to chat about a book released this week capturing his life story titled Soul Mandate, The Extraordinary Life of a Property Maverick, right after the break.
Online, on air,
anywhere, anytime.
This is the Sandton Times Hour. The best of talk and music in 1 hour. This is the Sandton Times Hour.
It's the Sandton Times Hour on Mix 93.8 and available on all good digital platforms. And as we get the hour going, it's always great to chat to people who've been movers and shakers in South Africa's economy and obviously in Greater Sandton and beyond its borders. And it's one thing being in the realty space. I mean, there's a lot of property shows when you go onto Netflix, when you go onto DSTV, that people absolutely love watching these massive houses being sold off. It's one thing being in the hot seat and in the driver's seat when you're selling these properties. It's another one when you've got your name on the board or on the advertising billboard selling those properties. And one man who's been synonymous with selling properties in South Africa is a man called Lou Geffen. He's the chairman of Sotheby's International Realty in South Africa. He's now brought out a book. It's available in all good bookstores, online and offline. It's called Soul Mandate, The Extraordinary Life of a Property Maverick. And he joins me on the line. Lou, it's great to have you on the Sandton Times Hour.
Hello, Alex. Hello to you and all your listeners.
Thank you so much. Well, Lou, it's quite a title to have to live up to. I mean, The Extraordinary Life of a Property Maverick. Do you sometimes look back on your life and think, my goodness, did I do all of that?
Yes, when you put it all together in one book, it does sound amazing. But as you live your life step by step, You don't feel it. It's a growing pattern.
Absolutely. Well, can you share a little bit more with us about your early life? What influenced you and what shaped you into this person that had this maverick spirit to take on this kind of business?
Well, I think it all started early in life. When I was 4 years old, my parents had a very contentious marriage. They got married and divorced each other 3 times during that period. But at 4 years old, my father was a gambler and my mother had enough of him, and she left for the Sorbonne in Paris to study for a year. So that year that she left me, I was placed with my granny and grandpa in the block of flats San Francisco, which is now in Hillbrow. And it was then in Parktown. they played rummy all day and I was left loose. So I became a maverick from that age because I had no supervision, hardly any supervision whatsoever. So I made my own, worked it out for myself.
So it kind of laid the foundation for what would eventually become a bit of a property empire. You mentioned in the book you were a hawker and then you ventured into construction. How did that sort of career progression come about?
So my mother was an amazing woman. I mean, she was a charismatic person and she was the founder of AIDA Real Estate. So subliminally, all those years growing up, I knew about real estate because that was the talk at the dinner table, whatever. So I had the subliminal messages, but I wouldn't say I was keen on it. But at 20, I gave it a try, and I went into the area of Greenside Memorandum, which is quite a middle-class, conservative area. And I found that I could do it, but I didn't really enjoy it. So this was after Israel. I went to Israel. I came back. I met my wife, Sandy. That year, which was about 1969, I think. I didn't want to get into the property business. I said to my mother, I said, nah, I would rather do construction, because she was building a house in Houghton. She was going to renovate and sell. So I said, let me do it. So you're talking about the hawking now. So the hawking happened after I got married. I went to buy a tray at Leachies, because I wanted the same kind of filigree tray that I saw in Israel and Jerusalem. I met this guy, Brian Rizzo, who was the manager, and I bought my tray. But my friend at the time, Tony Alcon, said to me, listen, why don't we buy the whole shop? I said, well, why don't we buy the whole shop? So I called Brian aside and I said, what do you want? They were having a sale of all this filigree and brasswork and he said, okay, I'll give you a price, 3,000 rand. In those days, it was a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, deal, but will you take a post-dated check? He said, who are you? I said, well, my mother's AIDA. There's no problem. You can, 3 weeks, I'll give you a post-dated check. So we gave him the post-dated check. The goods were delivered to, I was living with my mother that time in the Peacock House in Houghton. And the goods were delivered, and we started polishing, not knowing what to do. And during the night, it occurred to us, why don't we take the whole hall to Killarney Mall? In those days, they had a grassy verge. And so that's exactly what we did do. And in 20 minutes, a big jag pulls up. It was younger John's wife. And she said, how much are those two incense burners, boys? So I said, well, we bought them for 60. I said, well, the business model double up, 120 each. You just put them in the back of the car. And that's how it actually went. So the bottom line is within 3 weeks, we had 9,000. We paid Leachy 3,000. We now had 6,000 to burn. But in those days, so we decided to get a hawking license and go to Tehran. It was still under the Shah in those days, and all the stuff came from Tehran. We got a hawker's license, and off to Tehran we went. Two young guys, we were 24 apiece. And we went to the Shuk, and the rand in those days, believe it or not, was $5 to a rand. That was the exchange rate.
Goodness.
So in actual fact, we had $30,000.
Sure.
Worth of money. And so we bought, I don't know, many, many crates. The one shop in the Shuk that we dealt with didn't have enough goods, so they phoned Esfahan for extras. And we left Iran, or Persian, as it was in those days, with all those things. And I was newly married. And so what did I do? I bought a panel van. I went on honeymoon with a panel van with Sandy and myself. But we came back. It was business. So we started with the Indian hawkers in Rosebank. They were selling flowers. And
goodness,
that was fine. They enjoyed us because we brought business to their market. We played genuine Arabic music, Umm Kulthum, which is like classical Egyptian in the music, but this wailing sound drew the customers. And before long, we were selling our goods. And the only problem was there was an apartheid cop who was really serious. And he said, no, he's never seen hawkers like this. You've got to move every 20 minutes. That's the law. Now, we had such a lot of stuff, it was impossible. So we had to duck and dive every day to a new spot so that he wouldn't find us. His name was Clutie, I remember clearly. And when he did find us, let's say twice a month, he'd say, business is over, back up. And we've had to pack up and move on. But I mean, I did it for a year, to be honest. We sold all our goods, but it was enough. And that's when I went back into the real estate business, and which I didn't enjoy too much. So the first opportunity that came along, my mother was bought a house in Hartman. She was going to renovate it with another person. And I said, let me do it, please. She said, on one condition, you go and work with an architect for 6 months, learn the business, and then I'll let you do it. So that's exactly what I did do. I found an architect in the observatory, and his name was Jack Robbins. And I basically went as a laborer. He said, fine, I'll teach you, but no pay. I said, fine, I just wanted to watch. So I watched the whole house being built from top to bottom, whatever. And I then sold the house. He gave me the show day. First time I ever sat on a show day, actually sold the house on that particular, before the show day closed. And then I was in the construction business. He gave me a foreman of his, because he had finished his job, and the foreman was the nucleus of the team that I built around to do this house in Hartman, which was a fantastically built house. I mean, we created a beautiful Georgian home out of an old box. The only problem was that I ran that my budget exceeded the expectation, in which case I fell out with my mother over that. But the house was actually bought by one of South Africa's top industrialists, Benny Sloan. He was the head of Teralex. So the house was beautiful. It was 20,000 over budget.
That's not totally unrealistic, I suppose, in construction terms, hey, that things run over budget. But
no.
Yeah, I mean, you went from one kind of trading to another kind of trading altogether. You also had some encounters with Nelson Mandela, Princess Diana, Rafael Nadal. Before I let you go, you're going to have to tell us one story of one of those encounters.
Well, the Rafael Nadal one, that was the beautiful one, because the head of the CEO of Sotheby's International Realty, who is based in New Jersey, USA, he was a golfer, and he took it upon himself to create a beautiful venue with Rafa Nadal that would be a Sotheby's sponsored event at Nadal's hometown in Mallorca, and where he's got that whole complex. He's got soccer fields, he's got tennis courts, he's got the most amazing gym and hotel, fantastic complex. So twice I had the privilege of going there and mixing it with Rafa Nadal, and I brought a friend from South Africa both times, and it was just an amazing event.
Fantastic. Well, there you have it, Luke Geffen. He's got a new book out about his life. It's called Soul Mandate, The Extraordinary Life of a Property Maverick. He's, of course, the chairman of Sotheby's International Realty South Africa. If those stories whet your appetite, well, listen, there's a whole book that you can now unearth and go through even more interesting stories about Lou's life, and I encourage you to do that. Lou, it's been a pleasure having you on the Santon Times Hour. It is the bottom of the hour. We're going to take a quick break with some music, and we'll be right back with more of the Santon Times Hour right after this.
Connect with the Santon Times. Email editor@santontimes.co.za.
Now's the time to invest in you. Get ready to shine with Virgin Active this summer. Start with a free bag plus the rest of October on us. Level up and get the freedom to gym at any club with a premier membership and score 25% off fees. Or get the family moving and bag 40% off monthly fees. Call 0860 Get Fit or visit your nearest club to get started. You've got this, and we've got you. VirginActive.co.za. T's and C's apply.
Back for more?
The Santon Times Hour continues.
You're listening to the Santon Times Hour on Mix 93.8 with the Indlovu Youth Choir and Shoshaloza featuring Kaunda Ntunja. My name is Alexander Leipner, and you know how this works. If you listen regularly, you know that there's always some good stuff on the show, but then sometimes you forget what it was all about, or you forget a name or some contact details. Well, don't stress. We put all the information up on the website, www.santontimes.co.za, after the show, or as soon as we can. I know some weeks it's taken a little bit longer than others, but then just know that it's been a really busy week. You can go onto the show notes on the website and then find a breakdown of everything discussed on this week's edition. Also, be sure to check out the social media accounts at Santon Times, and you can also engage through those. And also, don't forget to get the Listen app. That's Listen without an E. You can now also get the Santon Times content on that app, and so much more. Now, this past week, the Maslow Hotel introduced a new executive chef, Chef Ofense Morake, and I was invited to a fabulous luncheon on the lawns of the Maslow Hotel. They put together a beautiful setup to showcase some of this man's talented dishes, some of the incredible stuff that he put together. And I must tell you, it is really, really something. I mean, I must say he's got a real talent for what he does. And before we get going, let me take this opportunity to congratulate you on some wonderful dishes, Chef Morake. And congratulations to you and your team.
Thank you very much, Alex. It was a really great afternoon. I'm happy the way it went.
So, Chef, tell me a little bit more about your career. How did you get to this point now where you're now looking after the kitchen at the Maslow Hotel?
Career-wise, my story is a little here and there. I was really kind of confused as to what exactly I wanted to do with my life, and wasted a lot of my mom's money just trying to figure all of that kind of, those kind of things out. But eventually, I decided to turn what was a hobby and a passion into a career. So I attended chef school in 2010. Eventually, from there, I was able to secure a great internship at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel in Naples, Florida. At that time, it was 5-star, 5-diamond. It had a certified master chef as a person who was in charge of the hotel. So it was an awesome opportunity. I spent some time over there. And coming back, I had a brief stint in food retail at one of South Africa's major retailers. And then from there, I took up a bit of a risky challenge. And I think that was, I think, where my career started to take shape, as I was part owner of a coffee shop called The Whippet in Linden. I was also part of the founding team of that. We ran there with them for about 5 years or so. One of the greatest experiences of my life. I think I had a glimpse into what it takes to run a restaurant and hospitality business. And on top of that, I think I got it was just nice, you know, being able to have complete creative freedom and being able to do exactly what you wanted with food, with flavors, with experiences, you know. And it was a small little shop. So you got very intimate with our guests in terms of, you know, you get to know your regulars, you get to shake somebody's hand every single day, and you really are involved in their day-to-day life. And I really enjoyed it. But after that, I decided to take a brief hiatus and take my talents to the bush. Because, you know, we're running a restaurant as well, you end up sort of doing a lot more administrative work and not as much of the creative things in terms of actually standing behind a chopping board, you know. So I decided I need to go back to the roots and start, you know, getting back to cooking in the right way. So I went to the bush, bit of a challenging experience, limited ingredients, only certain deliveries that were flying in stuff for us. Really a challenge in terms of a chefing perspective, putting together creative, flavorful, textured menus with limited ingredients was really cool. I spent about a year, about 2-3 years there before coming back home, working with Hyatt and eventually landing up here at Maslow.
I mean, I think the Maslow is all better for it. I mean, as I say, we had some incredible dishes that you served up. But just to touch on that that first step into the chef's world, I mean, kicking it off at the Ritz-Carlton is truly spectacular. And I believe you had a very good mentor there. How did he sort of contribute to your dedication, to attention, to detail in the kitchen?
I think he contributed because everything that happened in that kitchen, obviously to run 2 properties and 2 kitchens, serving, you know, 1,500 people on a daily basis, you have to be meticulous, especially if you want to serve creative, tasty, and flavorful food. So what I learned from him the most is organization is everything. And that's still something I live by now in the kitchen, and not executed well, but also in my personal life, to try to organize everything as well as you can before you head into something. So I think I took that from him. And I think the simplest and most meaningful lesson I learned from him was that everything needs to be written down. He used to say a short pencil is better than a long memory. Everything that we did in the kitchen, we used to have to carry a small little notebook that fits in your top pocket. Literally everything, whether you're making a sauce, whether you're going to fetch stock, whether you just seeing a quick recipe being done, it's much better than going through or reading a recipe book, because at that point you're taking in the practical way of doing a recipe as well as the, you know, the actual measurements to it. So I think from that experience, I learned that in order to get to sort of the pinnacle of what would be from a chefing perspective, you need to be organized, number one. You need to be knowledgeable about what you're doing, and that starts at the grassroots level. And also, you just need to be you need to be prepared. Always, always, always being prepared. He always had a plan for everything. Even if it looked like we were spinning and running around, he always had a plan.
Unbelievable. I love that. A short pencil is better than a long memory. I mean, a bit of a loaded question, but I've been really keen to ask you this. I mean, one of the other big things in the hospitality space that has become ever increasing is the challenge of food delivery services. And at one point, it was a taboo subject to bring in any food into a hotel that isn't from the hotel. Then we had the food delivery services pop up, and it became almost like a tidal wave of delivery guys dropping off food at hotels. What's your take on that? So what's your thoughts on how this has evolved?
I think in terms of the food delivery part of things, I welcome it, man. I welcome it because it gives people an opportunity to showcase whatever talents they have food-wise without the traditional brick-and-mortar kind of restaurant having to be built, you know? So I'm for it in that it's a platform that allows so many people to express themselves food-wise. At the Mazda, unfortunately, is not something that we allow. Obviously, being a guest in our restaurant, we want you to be immersed within our experience, and that means experiencing our F&B offering while you're here. But I've never been shy to say, or I've never been sort of challenged by it, or to think it was something that's going to take away from the traditional dining experiences that you have outside. I think it has its place currently, and I think it's sort of squeezed itself or wedged itself into the industry, into the restaurant industry anyway. So people who are going to order in are going to order in. People who are going to go out are going to go out. So I think it may have changed the terrain a little bit, but I'm not against it. Actually, in my previous post, I actually opened two dark kitchens as well that ran out of the same hotel kitchens. So it's something I'm quite familiar with. It's something that I also saw its value. And I also then also realized that it doesn't necessarily detract from traditional restaurants or traditional hotel dining or anything like that. I think if your experience calls for people, it wouldn't be sort of under threat just because a similar or the same product is available to be delivered to your house.
Mm. Okay.
Because the one thing that you can't replicate is that experience. As much as you can light some candles and put a tablecloth on your dinner table and then, you know, click accept on Uber Eats, and it's still not going to be the same thing.
Yeah, for sure. Well, listen, I mean, talking about challenges and talking about meeting the experience expectation, what are your plans now for Lacuna Bistro and Bar at the Maslow in terms of adjusting the menu, tweaking it? I mean, you had some great dishes that you introduced us to. Some of them might make it onto the menu. Some of them might go through a second round before you bring them into play.
Yes. So the next steps are going to be the product. So the product management kind of run. So we will try a bit more of the recipes. We will write the recipes up. We'll cook and taste everything. We'll go through the normal sort of product development process that I go through normally, which is to literally get a piece of paper, grab a few ingredients, and start making food and start documenting that process in order to put together the dishes that you want to finally end up with on our menu. So yeah, some of the ones that we served yesterday, given that response, I'd be silly to not try to explore putting those on the menu. So definitely some of them will probably land up on the menu, but it is a process, you know. The Lacuna Bistro menu right now is also a bit larger than I think it needs to be, so we're going to sort of tone it down, we're going to refine it, we're going to bring it down to a level where we have an all-day menu as opposed to a lunch and a dinner menu. I think in terms of the setup of the restaurant or the experience, we will set the restaurant up for lunch and dinner, but the menu will carry itself through all the way through. I think the type of dishes we want to do, the direction in which I want to take the menu, which was maybe a little bit highlighted in lunch, but not exactly to its fullest, is this concept where we create beautiful dishes and sharing sides. I really have always been kind of in love with this concept of sharing sides. I think that's the best way to dine ever. You know, how often have you gone to and seen a menu and wished you could try everything on there? So I'm trying to sort of hit the Lacuna Bistro dining experience and the menu in a way that says, if you're going to eat something, have a meal, but share it with somebody, whether it's another person in the hotel. It could be a stranger, it could be a loved one, it could be whatever it is. But that is where I'm pushing the concept. But yeah, I think the direction will be smaller menu, it'll run all day, and really encourage people to share meals together.
Actually, before I let you go, I need to ask you about the story of you keeping a full set of knives in your boot.
Is it strange? I don't know. This is like you're the third person to ask me about this. Is that a weird thing to do? I'm starting to think I might be a little bit weird. No, the story behind it is whenever I get an opportunity to cook, it could be anywhere, you know, and more often than not, I'm in my car. So whenever I get there, I want to make sure I have at least all the tools I require to at least deliver what I think is a good enough meal. I mean, anyway, like, things like Airbnbs, you know, you go on holiday, whatever it is, you get there and there's just one butter knife in the drawer. And now you're trying to cook something to eat and you don't have all the tools that you need. And for me, outside of that, my knives are outside of what they cost. My knives are like my babies. They're my little, they're the tools of my trade, but they're also a small extension of me. So I'm kind of a little obsessive about it. Yeah.
Well, it's tremendous. Well, it's been so great chatting to Executive Chef Ofensa Moraka. He's at the Maslow Hotel. And if you get a chance, I encourage you to go down to the hotel and maybe you get to try some of the new dishes. Maybe you get to see some of his touch coming into the menu. But it's been great chatting to you. Thank you so much for joining me on the Santon Times Hour.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me. And just keep a lookout on all the social media platforms and you'll see when we are going live with our new menu. Hope to see everybody soon.
Tremendous, man. We're going to take a quick musical break and more of the hour right after this.
Follow the Santon Times on social media.
At Santon Times.
The best of Santon and beyond.
You're listening to the Santon Times Hour.
This is the Santon Times Hour on Mix 93.8 and available on all good mobile apps and podcast platforms. One more time from the Indlovu Youth Choir with World in Union. And when the World Cup started, I remember playing a version of this and I'd said, well, you know, there weren't any great renditions of World in Union for this year. But the Indlovu Youth Choir stepped up and delivered this beauty and I think they've done an incredible job with it. And I'm so sorry that they haven't been around to actually perform this at the World Cup. I hope they do get an invite. I think it would be fantastic. It's almost time to call it a week, but before we do that, Uber Eats hosted its very first Merchant Awards in Sandton, honoring outstanding restaurants and eateries across South Africa. And we all know Uber Eats. If you keen on a little something at 11 o'clock at night, well, you can have a cheeseburger and chips delivered to your front door. Just log onto the app and you do your thing. And they've been doing that for quite some time. Actually, they kept us going during lockdown, didn't they? But joining me to chat about this is Charles Mhango, Head of Operations for Uber Eats in Sub-Saharan Africa. And Charles, thank you for joining me on the Santon Times Hour.
Thanks, Alex. Thanks for having me. And thanks for the kind words there.
Well, Charles, I mean, it wasn't just kind words from me. It was also kind words from you to some of your merchants who've been with you for quite some time. And you took some time out to recognize them. But before we even get into that, what inspired you to initiate these merchant awards for the very first time?
Yeah, great question. So I think as a business, we realize that we're part of an ecosystem, part of a community that serves a lot of people, right? As you can imagine, the restaurant industry serves a lot of people and creates a lot of income generating opportunities, ranging from people that work in the restaurants themselves, as well as, you know, our delivery partners, right? So they're creating a lot of earning opportunities and impacting lives in a positive way. So we really wanted to showcase our commitment to being part of this ecosystem. And so our reasons were twofold. One, we wanted to commit our forward journey with the merchants. Our journey, we want to continue to facilitate growth for these merchants, continue to enhance their customer reach, and continue being a valuable partner to them. And the second one was really to celebrate the immense contribution that they're making in the economy, right? If you can imagine what happened in COVID, during COVID 2020, it was a really tough time for this industry. But the merchants themselves, you know, they held the head high. They contributed, they plowed on, and now we're seeing an advent and a turn in the industry and that it continues to contribute a lot more in the South African economy. So I think that's something worth celebrating. And we thought that, you know, it is time. The time is ripe for us to actually celebrate these merchants, but also continue to establish our commitment with them.
Well, you had the event in Sandton, and there are also quite a few Sandton winners, and we're going to put all those details up on the website. So if you're interested to find out if your favorite spot down the road made it and if they are recognized. But at the same time, what I also quite enjoyed was it wasn't just sort of the big names that were out there. There were also quite a lot of small businesses, and there were quite a few restaurants and eateries in Sandton that I'd never heard of that also got nominated and also walked away with some recognition. And it's kind of encouraged me to go and find out who they are, what they do. And I think that is a very worthwhile thing. But how did the voting process work? Is it just a matter of you guys ordering some lunch at Uber Eats and then sort of like flipping a coin and deciding who wins this? Or was there more science to it than the way I've explained it?
So there was a lot more science to it. As you remember, at the awards themselves, we had a few categories. So we had one category which was mainly focused on the delivery people themselves. So when the delivery people, similar to you, when you order on the app, we give you a chance to rate the eatery that you order from. The same goes for our delivery people. So delivery people who vote for merchants that find that they're friendly, that they don't wait, they don't have a lot of wait times in the queue when they're delivering food, merchants that treat them with dignity and respect. So that was one category. On the other categories, we had one that is like our eaters' favorites, right? So you look at an area like Sandton, you pull a community of eaters, they also vote in app around what eateries they find to be their favorites. And so you look at sort of those voting processes, tally those numbers, and then you get your local favorites. Then the third component is what we call operational efficiency. So we are an innovative business. We pride ourselves in our, you know, flawless operations. And so operational efficiency is something that we look at and take seriously. So we look at things like, you know, restaurant prep times, acceptance rates. So out of 10 orders, how many are you accepting, for instance? And then we look at like the prep times. Like, as you can imagine, you as an eater, if you order your burger, you kind of want it within, you know, your hands within the next 30 minutes. So merchants that are committed to making the food at a good, decent pace and make sure that you get your food warm and in a good state, those are sort of like the ones that you obviously favor, right? So we look at those things as operational metrics to determine some of the winners.
So Kimchi, which is a restaurant I'd also never heard of, won the Merchant of the Year category, which I thought was quite a big title to walk away with. Can you give me some ideas as to what were the criteria, what did they consider when it came to awarding this particular award to Kimchi?
Yeah, so Kimchi, brilliant merchant from Cape Town. She's the one who won the Merchant of the Year award. So as you can imagine, we said we had various categories as to what we're looking at. So operational efficiency, looking at treatment of couriers and the couriers rating, looking at eaters and eater rating, looking at order numbers, looking at all sorts of those things. And then when you look at these various different categories, then you do start to see a trend of someone who's standing out across all various categories. And that's why Kimchi came top. They came top on operational efficiency. They came top as a courier's favorite merchant in Cape Town, as well as the eaters. And so that's what kind of determined them to be Merchant of the Year award.
So apart from Kimchi walking away with the big prize and the big title, any other success stories that you uncovered in the process of nominating and obviously then awarding some of these successful merchants?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a merchant called Wakanda that was also at the event. They're a small, medium-sized business. They were part of our academy with AMI. So as part of our community outreach, we've partnered with AMI, the African Management Institute, to aim to sort of beef up entrepreneurial skills in some of the merchants that are just coming up. You can imagine some of the merchants are chefs at heart. They don't know how to run a business. They haven't really had the background of running a business. So we beef them with the sort of entrepreneurial skills of building a business. So as we embarked on this journey, looking at some of these merchants, to our surprise, Wakanda was one of the merchants. You know, they were coming up tops in everything, and it made us very immensely proud to honor them, knowing that they also sort of come from our, you know, AMI partnership on sort of cultivating entrepreneurs in the country.
Well, it's great to see that's not just the juggernauts in the convenience food business that are getting it right or not even close to getting it right. It's actually often the smaller to medium-sized businesses that seem to be striking a chord on many different points. And it's good to see them stepping up and winning these big titles. Now, before I let you go, Charles, one category that I missed was the driver of the year. Because often I meet these drivers, they're unbelievably friendly. They have a tough job. I mean, riding those motorbikes day in, day out. And then also when it rains, especially now that we're going into the summer season, I mean, they really have a challenging time. Charles, any plans to introduce the driver of the year for 2024?
That's a brilliant question. So before this, in the past 4 weeks, what we've been doing is we've been touring the country, having what we call our Courier Inner Appreciation Awards, which is solely just like we had the Merchant Awards. This is solely focused on appreciating our courier partners, our delivery people. And so we've had these events in Johannesburg, Cape Town, East London, Port Elizabeth, Bloemfontein, where, you know, we had massive prizes. Some of the couriers that are the best performing managed to walk away with motorbikes. And so we are doing our best to make sure that all sides of the marketplace are being honored, because, again, we realize that we are part of a larger ecosystem here.
Well, there you have it, Charles Mahango, Head of Operations for Uber Eats in Sub-Saharan Africa, talking about the first annual Uber Eats Merchant Awards, which were held in Sandton this past week. And that's it for another Sandton Times Hour on Mix 93.8, and is always available as a podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify. And of course, it's now on the Listen app. You can email us on editor@sandtontimes.co.za or reach out on social media at Sandton Times. And don't forget to visit the website www.sandtontimes.co.za. And feel free to send through your questions, your comments, your feedback, your input. All of those things are welcome. It's always good to hear from you. Thank you to all my guests who made the time to be on the show this week. And as always, Vincenzo, you know, I had somebody asking about you this week, saying, you know, your producer seems to be working like an absolute madman. And I said, yes, indeed he does. He works hard. He does the audio. He does all these things. Incredible. But we'll be watching the rugby on Saturday and hopefully next week, Monday. Well, fingers crossed, we have something to celebrate. Thank you to the Sandton Times team, as well as everyone at Mix 93.8. And of course, thank you to you for listening every single week. And let's connect again next week.
That's it for this week. Thanks for listening to the Sandton Times Hour. And if you enjoyed it, be sure to share it.